and welcome to Happy Place, the show where I, Fern Cotton, take time out to just, breathe, usually in the company of someone else who needs a breather too. Today's guest is another podcaster. She is the presenter of the hit show How to Fail. It's Elizabeth Day.
Humans are community-based animals. Mm. So there's a sense that we need our tribe. We need to forge connections. That's what makes us make sense.
And yes. It's
what makes us survive. But I feel like the dial on that has got really warped.
Mm.
And we're seeking too much community in a way, like too many voices.
If you're a fan of the show, and you should be because it's exceptional, or even if you're not, you'll definitely get something out of this episode. And it's a little bit of a peek behind the curtain of how we make our shows too.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And now, here's the show. Elizabeth, I'm so glad that we're getting... This is, like, lovely.
I'm so already lovely. Loving this so much more than anything else I've ever done.
We were just saying, it's, like, the podcast world is a nice world. Everyone gets on and everyone's willing to, you know, help each other out or cross-pollinate. It's just gorgeous. It's a lovely place to be.
Yeah, it's so true. And I really, really noticed that when I started my podcast, that everyone was so supportive, and it felt like there was this attitude that there was space for all of us.
Ooh.
Rather than being really competitive,
yeah,
and mean-spirited, it was like, welcome.
Yeah.
And it's been such a lovely, lovely experience for me.
Same. It's very empowering, I think, to be able to have that space to chat about whatever you like.
Yes, and as you know, because this is the first time, Fern, that you have interviewed me.
I know.
I've only ever interviewed you for newspapers, which has been a delightful experience because you are amazing.
Well, same for me.
But it's also, I have to write it up in a certain way for a newspaper at the behest of a certain editor, and there's always a certain word count. And it was so liberating for me just to do an interview that was asking the questions that I actually wanted to know.
Yeah.
And to get beneath the surface of whatever project someone was trying to promote or whatever editor was saying to me, oh, she's a woman of a certain age, ask her if she wants babies.
But I know what you mean, because I have had the same, I guess, with other broadcasting activities like radio, TV a little bit, but certainly radio, you have 8 minutes, probably max. And, you know, how deep can you go in eight minutes? I tried once with Madonna, and you don't get very deep in 8 minutes. You can't, you know. And I always want to... It takes time as well, doesn't it? To sort of, you know, relax and get the other person to trust you and to then go off on tangents you hadn't even imagined. That's what I love about it. Is I'll do prep, but actually it's nice just to sort of wander off somewhere over here and explore subjects, and we have the time and the space to do it, which is gorgeous.
Definitely. And one of the things that I love about your podcast and you as an interviewer is your active listening, because I really think that that's such a key to getting a good interview, is actually not coming with a list of pre-prepared questions, as useful as that is for those moments of brain freeze, but it is kind of listening to how the person responds and what they're saying.
But that's because, Elizabeth, this podcast is a completely selfish endeavour where I just want to learn from other people and hear stories. I think storytelling is so important. So for me to be able to sit and listen to, my God, I've had just the most beautiful list of people take part in the podcast, and I feel so lucky whenever I get to record an episode, and I genuinely come away thinking differently, you know, little tweaks in my brain have been made, and that's why I'm doing it, really. It's heavenly. And I'm sure that was a catalyst for you, because the subject matter that you deal with is one that massively fascinates me. And I think we have so much to learn from failure, obviously, but also listening to other people's failures. It seems like a tricky, uncomfortable subject to delve into, but it's so valuable to us all.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for saying that, because that's totally what I think. And the reason I started the podcast was actually, I mean, the short answer is that I got dumped. And a 2-year relationship came to an end 3 weeks before my 39th birthday. So I was single, staring down what felt like the barrel of my 40s.
Yeah.
And I looked back on the decade of my 30s, and they'd been a decade of such intense transition. And it was the decade during which I got married and divorced, during which I tried and failed to have children. So I had 2 rounds of IVF unsuccessfully, and then I had a miscarriage at 3 months. And then after all of that, I got into a new relationship where I said to myself, I'm not going to make the same mistakes, and I've learned so much, and I know myself so much better. And then to find that that had ended as well, even though I tried actively to make different decisions, was really devastating.
Yeah.
And it was in that patch of time that I started listening to a lot of podcasts, first of all, because pop music made me too sad.
Yeah.
And also having conversations with my friends and conversations with myself, where I realised that whilst my 30s had been quite knackering in many ways, they'd also been a massive learning experience. And I had discovered reserves of strength that I never realized I possessed. And that was really the genesis, because I thought, oh, I feel like a failure on so many levels, but I feel really empowered by acknowledging that.
Resilience.
Totally.
We all need it, and we forget that. And you can only get resilience by fucking up.
Exactly. And I now feel that every failure can be seen, if you choose to see it this way, as a lesson wrapped up in a mistake,
yeah,
or a nudge from the universe in a slightly different direction. And now I choose to believe that relationships end not because I'm terrible and I've done something wrong and I'm not worthy, but because that person has come into my life and taught me the lesson that I needed to learn. And actually, I'm not losing them, I'm finding myself. So that's how I choose to look at things now.
I mean, you've written prolifically about your IVF and your divorce, and I love and admire the fact that you've done that, because so many other men and women out there who will have experienced the pain and the trauma that comes with that will get such solace and feel comforted from your story. So it's remarkable that you continue to discuss those very important subjects. But looking back at that period, you know, at the time you said it, you know, it felt like a decade where there was a lot of failure and mistakes made. Looking back at where you're at now, would you say you still view them as failures, or are you just kind of accepting of this was just twists and turns that were happening in my life?
It's a great question. Both, I think, is the answer, in that I do feel it was a failure not to have children, which is such a weird thing, because ultimately I'm not in control of my own biology. But a lot of the processes of infertility are clothed in the language of failure. So I was told,
which is awful.
It is awful. And the vast majority of fertility experts are men.
Yeah.
So I was being told repeatedly by male consultants, you're failing to respond to drugs.
God, I hate this. I can't bear it.
And a friend of mine was told her womb was an inhospitable environment. I mean, this is language that would not be used.
But also, I find it just incredible and horrendous that any doctor would say to a woman, you can't or you won't. Because, and I'm sure you've heard many stories like this, I've had friends that were told, you can't and you won't, or there is something that is failing or wrong. But then they have gone on to have a baby.
Yeah.
But mentally, I think what that does to you when you're told that is then debilitate you on a mental level, as well as the physical stuff that's going on. Then your head's on board with it. So you don't stand a chance in getting out of that mindset because a professional is telling you so. And I just, that needs to change.
Definitely. It does. And that's part of the reason why I talk about it.
Yeah, good.
A lot. Because I really want to get that message out there. And I really want women and men who are going through similar things not to feel the shame that I felt. And it wasn't just shame from the medical professionals. It was also shame that I wasn't living up to my own expectations. So I had just always imagined that I would have children in my 30s and be married, and that marriage would last. And I grew up in the 80s when there were a million and one brilliant rom-coms that I watched that really conditioned my expectation of what life was going to be like. And now I try very hard not to have a plan, because if I don't have a plan, then life can't not go according to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, it's the best way to live.
Yeah, without expectation and just sort of in the moment as much as I possibly can. But just to go back to whether I still think of them as failures, I do, but I'm also at peace with it. And I think that that's really important to say, is that I can be sad about things that haven't worked out, and I can be at peace with that sadness.
Yeah.
And I can choose to grow from it, and I've learned an enormous amount, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So it's not that I'm sort of Pollyanna-ish about it. It's not that I'm saying to everyone, you must fail happily all the time. Like, you can fail and be really sad about it, and that's completely appropriate, but it doesn't mean that you can't also grow from it.
It's so key that you just said that, because I think so many times we assume acceptance does equal happiness, that you're meant to go, I accept that period of my life and it's all great now. And it's like, no, acceptance is about sitting in the discomfort, and that can be truly excruciating and take great daily courage and discipline, but it's still better than not accepting things and butting your head against a wall because you can't move on from things. How are you at sitting in that discomfort today?
So much better than I used to be, and I think you're totally right. Everything you just said is so absolutely what I believe. I think that as you get older, you accumulate more experience. So I now know that any failure I will have to endure, and there is no doubt that failure will happen to me.
Oh, we all will.
All of us. Yeah. Every single day.
You can't escape it.
Yeah. But I now know that I'm stronger than I think, and that I can sit through it. And because the feelings are familiar, I sort of, it makes it better, because I'm like, oh, I've been here before and I felt these feelings and they have always passed. So that's what I need to cling on to. Mm-hmm. And that's what will get me into the next moment. Yeah. And that's what I return to.
How many of our failures, and I'm talking about all of us here, how many of our failures do you think we would still feel were failures if we excluded outside opinion? Because a lot of the time, since thinking about this podcast, I've been really thinking about my own failures, and I've got a whole list of them. But some of them I'm like, you know what? I don't know if I really believe that was a failure. I've just marked it as one because everybody else said it was, or culturally or socially, that's what it is deemed as. So almost, you know, it can be quite freeing to go, well, I don't really give a shit, even if everyone else thinks that's not great.
Yeah, that's so interesting, actually, because I think that ties into, I'm often asked what I define failure as. Mm. And I define it as when something doesn't go according to plan. So then you have to question the plan. Mm. Where does the plan come from? And it could be that the plan is entirely yours, like it was with me with children. Like that, although actually I say that, but possibly lots of that is social conditioning as well, which in itself is other people's opinions. But so much of how people feel they don't live up to stuff is absolutely shaped by the outside world. Yeah. And because we now live in a culture where we all know way too much about everything and about each other's lives, and you can scroll through Instagram and appear to see everyone nailing it, because we have that constant social media feed, it's so much harder to tune out that white noise and to really ask yourself what you want and what success means to you. Because success can mean so many different things. And I think as a society, we've really prized a weird metric of success, which is about money or celebrity or living in a nice house and driving a nice car, when actually success could be for you getting a great night's sleep, being able to look yourself in the mirror and think, I am who I truly am. Like, I am my authentic self. That's, for me, true success.
Yes, I know that one, because by trial and error, I have worked it out, Elizabeth. Honestly, I still get people today, I'll get different reactions to my work and what I'm doing. You know, there are obviously a lot of people that will look at Instagram, like you say, and go, oh, they're on the TV, or they're wearing a nice outfit, or they make assumptions about your lifestyle or whatever, they must be fine. They must, what have they got to moan about? And it's such a weird myth. And obviously, if you know, you are struggling in life financially, or you hate your job, obviously having a nice job is going to ease things up. But it cannot exclude loss, pain, trauma, panic, all those other dark things we don't want. That isn't like a safety buffer to stop you from experiencing those things. So it is so strange that we almost equate that success as kind of like freedom. Yeah. If you have these certain things, you will be able to negate all of the shit that none of us want to experience. And it's so, that's obviously like how many amazingly talented, well-known people have taken their own life that we've sadly witnessed. You know, we know that doesn't make sense, but still, I guess because of social media, we still do, and just the media in general, buy into that bizarre fantasy. And it's so dangerous for us all.
It's so dangerous. And I think you've identified something really important there, which is that I clearly speak from a place of immense privilege. I am white, middle class. I own a laptop. That puts me in the top 0.5% of the global population. There are certain experiences of which I can never speak, and I would not seek to do so, because that would be super patronising. So I cannot know what it is like to be a person of colour, to be homeless, to be living with a chronic disability. And I appreciate that everyone has therefore a very different spectrum of failure. But I think that you are completely right that this language is universal in so many ways, and that actually success is so difficult to embrace if you haven't first embraced yourself.
Of course. Absolutely.
And I imagine for someone like you, Fern, because you are so sensitive, and that's you're an empath, and growing up in an industry where everyone was formulating opinions of you from such a young age, I mean, that is heavy stuff.
Oh yeah, it's not conducive to being sane, that's for sure, most of the time. It's weird. It's definitely a strange thing. And I think, you know, I am massively sensitive, but that's what also allows me to sort of do this work and enjoy it so much, and to be empathetic and to seek out great stories and meet lots of interesting people. And I think that's, you know, that's where we all need to start from, is looking at other people and other people's stories as unique and separate, rather than whacking people in these groups of, well, this means this if you're in that group and that means that. Because not only is it unfair on, you know, everybody, but it's also unfair on you, because then you're trying to attain something or reach a place that doesn't really exist. You've got to just do what's right for you. And like you say, you know, at the start of this, define your own, you know, realm of success. What does it mean? What shape is it? What does it look like? And I, you know, in my 20s, I had all sorts of crazy, you know, sort of seemingly crazy success on paper. So I was doing TV shows in America and stuff over here, and, you know, really big TV shows, and it's all great. And yeah, some of it was very exciting and fun. But today, my success is, like this morning, getting my kids out of the door on time to get to school. Oh my God, huge tick. Feel amazing about that. Having an hour on my own to just sit and read or listen to music and draw a picture. And it's the simple little pockets of calm. Like, that for me is absolute luxury. And I think it changes in time, and I think the more we all understand that, rather than thinking success is this on Instagram, we can just stop giving ourselves such a bloody hard time.
Definitely. And I really have to remind myself, because as well as podcasting, I write. And so I write books and I'm a journalist. I now no longer look at the online comments, because that is a way of preserving.
Awful.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know better than most. They are awful.
Yeah.
And actually, looking at them, you're only ever looking for the bad things. They're the things that will stick. It's like rootling through your partner's desk drawers to try and find letters from his ex. I sound like a 19th century spinster, but it is a bit like that. It's like you're looking for the thing that is like picking a scab that will make you feel bad about yourself. And I just realized relatively recently, actually, that was not a good idea. Why would I intentionally want to wound
myself?
So I don't look at online comments. And now when I write a book and I put it out there, I know that I need to feel good about what I've produced myself. but I also have sort of four cornerstone relationships in my life. And those people I love and I trust, and I know that they have my best interests at heart. And I also know that they will tell me the truth in a loving way. Mm. And if they think I've done a good job, then that's all I need. And that's what I'm really working on is that. Like, that's the opinion that I need and yeah. No one else.
It's important, I think, for all of us to have a small core inner circle that we can really reach out to, and we know what we're getting back is unrelated to them. And completely for the good of you, and that you can also reciprocate and do the same to them. Because all of us are weirdly, whether you're in the public eye or not, sort of looking for this exterior adulation from likes or whatever it might be on social media. And actually it's rooting into those real opinions. And it goes back to that sort of question of, you know, would some of our failures be personally seen as failures if all of that outside noise was gone? Or even, you know, what your boss is saying to you or your peers are saying to you, does it really matter? Because I've been taken off loads of TV shows, like tons. And it's weird in TV. You don't necessarily get sacked, just no one speaks to you and then you're not hired again. Like, it's very weird.
That's horrible. Yeah, that's like being ghosted.
It's completely. There's no like, can you come into my office? Look, you weren't good enough, you're sacked. It's just, oh, that show's on the TV that I used to do and I'm not there. Like, I've had that loads of times. And in the past, I have viewed that as failure because other people have told me you're not good enough. Mm. But I think I'm at an age and a place now where I can go, I just wasn't meant to be there. I just wasn't meant to do it, you know. And I think it's hard when it's a boss or someone you work with or someone that you looked up to, but it still doesn't mean that's fact.
Yeah. Totally. And I think there are two things I want to say that. Like, humans are community-based animals. Mm. So there's a sense that we need our tribe. We need to forge connections. That's what makes us make sense. And yes. It's what makes us survive. But I feel like the dial on that has got really warped. Mm. And we're seeking too much community in a way, like too many voices. There's that research, isn't there, that a village is made up ideally of 150 people.
Oh, right.
That's your ideal number of most people on Facebook have 150 friends completely sort of naturally. And it seems to be that's the natural ideal number for a human community. Beyond that, it's really stressful because you can't keep in touch with everyone on a congruent level. And then external voices get more important when they shouldn't be. So I think that the nucleus of our community has expanded too much. And so therefore we now no longer know how to differentiate between the voice that's screeching in an online comment forum and your mother, you know?
Yeah, it's so true.
They
the
seem
lines
to bear
are
the same weight. Yeah.
And we just have to look back into our, you know, our gut, our intuition to some extent and go, well, what is it for me? What does it mean to me? Rather than all of that noise.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's interesting, I guess, how people react so differently to failure as well, because I was sort of thinking about all of my friends and family and myself and how we all react so differently to failure, sort of naturally, inherently, without all of that social conditioning or where we've ended up in life. And I certainly know some people that will ignore failure altogether, like they just didn't see it happen and they just plow on. Which I guess can go down two routes, like just total oblivion where you don't learn, or it comes up and bites you in the arse later down the line. Or some are really defined by it and feel very trapped by their failure. And the language they use about themselves is, I am a failure, this failed, and they can't seem to get out of it. Mm. I mean, all of us want to reach that kind of place where we accept failure and we move on. But it seems like those first two are probably more prominent in sort of, you know, modern day society. naturally, which camp do you think you fall into? Have you defined yourself by failure previously?
Yes, I think I fall into that camp. And I think that's very astute because I actually think, I hate to generalise about gender, she said, about to generalise by gender. But generally speaking, I think that women are more likely to do that. Mm. We're more likely to be the ones who take ourselves down before someone else does. Mm. Whereas generally speaking, when I did the first series of the How to Fail podcast, I didn't know what I was doing. And I basically had to rely on contacts and friends to be my first eight guests. And I put out a lot of requests. And generally speaking, the men who got back to me didn't feel that they had failed and therefore didn't feel that they were right for the podcast.
Wow.
And it wasn't that they were being overweeningly arrogant. It was actually just that they saw it in a different way. They were more confident about right. occupying the space in this world. And it's partly because if you are lucky enough to be a white middle-class man, then you are born into a world that is made in your image. Mm. So generally, if you encounter an obstacle, you see it as something to get over on your path to eventual success.
Mm, how interesting.
Yeah. Whereas I think if you're a person of colour or a woman or part of a marginalised community, the world isn't made in your image and therefore an obstacle can feel completely defeating mm. and you define yourself according to it. I'm really happy to say that that's changed a lot as I've seen the podcast grow. And now people of sort of all genders have sort of different takes on failure. But I just thought that that was, you know, if we could...
So interesting.
Yeah. If we could adopt 5% of the confidence of that white man, mm. that kind of myth of the white man who's just super confident about everything, imagine what the rest of us could do.
Yeah, because I was reading an article that you'd written a while ago and it was about why women are so self-deprecating always in a very flippant sort of, you know, in small yeah. ways. But if someone says, I like your dress, well, oh God, it's just this old thing. You know, it's just our, it's, I don't know if it's again, sort of social indoctrination, but that's kind of the language that we'll always use about ourselves rather than, yeah, I look great today or yeah. whatever it might be. And it's weird that we've ended up in that place where we're so bad at taking compliments or being kind to ourselves. We constantly beat ourselves up. You know, I've got a bunch of girlfriends and we'll talk, you know, so often about this kind of subject. And actually, there are quite a few of my male friends that do fit into this tribe now. But we give ourselves such a hard time, especially about like things that are deemed as tiny failures, small little road bumps. And we give ourselves such a hard time. And I don't think it was like that 100 years ago. It can't have been.
I think you're right. And I think, you know, recently I had to send an email to someone who I know, who I really like. It was a work email and I had to raise an issue that I felt uncomfortable raising.
Yeah.
But it was basically that something factually incorrect had been written in a piece and I had to raise it with the relevant person. And I was so worried about that and so stressed out about it. And it in my mind, I mean, I was restless that night. I could barely sleep. Mm. And in my mind, it had accumulated such importance. And then I got the loveliest email back and it was ridiculous. And I basically just made it up in my head. And I think it's because sensitive people want to forge connections with other people. Mm. And sensitive people often struggle in the world of traditional work. So I don't know about you, but I hate offices.
Yeah.
I hate working in an office. And I'm now lucky in the point of my career that I'm at that I don't have to. And the reason I hate offices is because I think the vast majority of them are still run along traditionally alpha male lines.
Yeah.
Where there is less opportunity to forge the kind of empathetic, sensitive connection that we like to do. And it means that, you know, when I did work in an office, I would be sending these emails littered with these mitigating, self-deprecating words, being yeah. like, this is probably a rubbish idea. It would be like, you know, that would be my first sentence.
I've so done that.
Yeah.
Why do we do that?
And I think, again, it's like this thing of we don't have confidence in ourselves and we feel like someone's about to sort of shoot us down and we're working in an environment that hasn't learned how to respond more flexibly to people. And yeah, and I would just send these emails being like, I just wondered if you might consider this. And after a while, I got really sick of myself. And it was partly because I was writing a novel at the time, which had a male character at its centre. And the male character was this like bombastic businessman millionaire. And I was able to write this character. And he didn't care what other people thought. He just did what he wanted. I mean, he felt like he was a master of the universe. And I was like, this is interesting that I'm capable of writing the character and therefore knowing how this character might think. And I'm not capable of applying that in my own life.
Yeah.
And then I just started deleting all of those words, all of those lessening words from my emails. And that made a real difference.
It makes such a difference. Like you say, if you're sensitive, if you're a people pleaser, to be upfront and direct, and I'm saying this from total personal experience, is so difficult. And I've started to make that turn this year.
Yeah.
Because I before was quite boundaryless. And I hated saying to people up front, you know, this is how I like to work, or this is how I like to, you know, have a dynamic friendship wise or whatever. I found it so difficult to do that, that I would kind of just be boundaryless and let them come into my life and do whatever they wanted to do without me, you know, saying anything or setting any guidelines or being honest, really. And oh my God, I got into all sorts of trouble with, you know, friendships breaking down and dynamics just completely going awry, like very strange situations. And then this year I thought, I've got to try this boundary thing.
Yeah.
And at first I thought, oh my God, they're going to think I'm such a wanker and I'm being so, you know, bossy and overly confident, and they're going to just think, who the hell does she think she is? Whereas, like you said with that email, that's very rarely the case. People like to know where they stand and go, oh, cool, fine. You don't like that? Absolutely cool. I don't like this. And, you know, they will match up to your request with their own. But I have found it such a simple thing, so difficult. And it's a shame that I think so many of us feel such a lack of confidence in that way, because it is a huge lack of confidence, and it's a self-esteem issue as well.
Hugely. And I, like you, this year have been really concentrating on boundaries because I find it so hard.
Mm.
And my boyfriend is always joking, like, you know, whenever I go out, I'll go out and he'll be like, don't make best friends with the shopkeeper. Yeah. But I'm like you in that I really like forging connections. Ooh. And then it sort of happens. And then you get yourself enmeshed into this whole situation where then you feel you owe someone something and you don't want to let them down.
Yeah.
And it's so difficult. And I remember reading this thing. I follow this woman on Instagram called The Holistic Psychologist.
Oh, I've got to follow this person.
You will love her. She's amazing.
Right.
And I was in LA over the summer and she did a guided meditation on Venice Beach, which I think is the most wanky thing I've ever said.
but
went.
It sounds great.
It was so great. I went and it was really wonderful.
Wow.
And I got to suspend all of my British cynicism and just sit there in
Heavenly.
The sunshine. It was really lovely.
Did you have a shot of wheatgrass after?
Yes, I went.
The dream is complete.
It was like chlorophyll water. Actually, fern, chlorophyll water. But she said this thing on Instagram. She had this thing about boundaries and what you should say versus what you feel like saying.
Mm.
So what you feel like saying, I really struggle saying no when people ask me out in the evenings. Oh. But actually, I really, sometimes I just want a night on my own at home.
I do every night.
Yeah. But sometimes you're made to feel bad about that because someone, in a lovely way, really wants to see you. But actually, there's this one night of the week and you need to take that for yourself, for self-care. And the holistic psychologist said, what you traditionally might say is, I'm really sorry, and come up with an excuse. Like, I'm really sorry, I'm really busy and I just can't make it and I'm really stressed and I'm... Or you'd flat out lie and be like, I've got my friend's birthday party.
Yeah, done that.
But she said what you should actually say is, I'm sorry, I'm that sounds fun, I'm sad I won't be able to make it.
Nice.
And leave it like that.
Yeah.
You don't need to explain yourself.
No.
You actually don't need to apologise. You just need to express yourself in a kind way that is giving but not too giving, and it doesn't eradicate your sense of self.
That's what I've started doing this year, because especially with the going out on nighttime thing, there is this huge pressure. We're meant to be like living the dream, out all the time, having all this crazy fun. I did that in my 20s, like every night, and I can't be arsed, and I'm really tired, and I like reading in bed. So I am quite honest with people. Like, I'll go out for dinner here and there with some mates, like very small groups, but the thought of going to a party, I literally feel anxious thinking about it. So I just tend to say to people, look, I am absolutely knackered at the moment and it's the truth. And I'm just being a bit of a hermit and I'm hanging out at home. But, you know, thank you for thinking of me. And if I don't get invited out anymore, so be it. You know, I'm off the party list. I'm not going to go anyway. So it's fine.
One of my real fears is like ending up alone. I think because I don't have children, therefore I don't have anyone locked in. Now, I know that children, there's never that guarantee that they're going to be around and love you
they
forever.
Will probably fuck right off to university and not call you for a very long time. I don't think I like being on my own. And I know, like, there's obviously a huge problem with loneliness around the world. But in this country, we know it. And there's statistics to prove it. And it's a horrible place to be at if you properly feel lonely and, like, you don't have anyone. And I think there's so much we need to do about that and drive a sense of community more, because community's kind of gone down the pan. And it is awful, especially for the elderly, that, you know, I had grandparents that were in a similar boat and we would try and be there as much as we could. But loneliness is a huge problem. So I totally get where that fear roots back to that so often.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've been very lucky. I haven't actually felt loneliness because I am a bit of a... I like being on my own a lot of the time. I like just reading and being quiet. I don't know if it's a reaction to how, like, loud my job can be. But I kind of like that. So if I don't get invited out ever again, I sort of don't care.
Yeah.
Which is a bit mean, perhaps, to say.
No, I think it's great.
I mean, I have lovely friends that I do hope will be in my life forever. And I hope that we, you know, grow grey together and sit chatting about all of this sort of stuff. You know, and I'll put you in that camp. I hope we get to do this when we're in our 90s still and be waffling on about stuff. So you definitely won't be alone.
Great. If I can lock you in.
Okay. We're fine. But I get that is the root of that fear. But it's funny, we attach it to kind of general socialising.
Can I ask you whether I suppose because you were so young when you became famous, if I can use that word. I was about to use successful, but because we've had that whole conversation about success. Did you find that certain friends phased themselves out of your life or started thinking of you differently even though you hadn't changed because maybe they were threatened by your...
You know what? I think I've been quite lucky. So I even had like quite a small friendship group at school, and there were six of us. We all grew up in the same sort of suburbs of northwest London, working class families, and we're all still best mates and we hang out all the time. And they're the ones actually that can see past all of that, if anything. They couldn't give a shit what I'm up to, what TV show it is or whatever. We always just lock back to sort of being 12, which is quite nice. So I think I've been very lucky that I just got given this great group of mates, and we have a different special little gang when we're together. So I do feel very supported in that way, which is really nice. And I haven't had to delve into that sort of boundary thing with them because it's sometimes not needed, I don't think, is it? With certain people. You just kind of all know where you stand.
Definitely. The best friends are definitely like that.
The best friends. How have you found... I love that we've connected on the boundary thing because it's such a big one for me. How have you found being a journalist, bearing that in mind? Because and this is me totally generalising, but also from experience, my experience of being interviewed by journalists is that it is terrifying. I feel judged. I feel I'm about to be tricked, and often I am. But with you, when you've interviewed me a couple of times now, and from reading your work and how you've interviewed other people, like the lovely piece you did with Nadia recently,
you
don't do that. You just have a nice chat. And then you write it up fairly. Like, I read the interview that that we did together for You magazine, and I was like, yeah, that's spot on. And I don't feel that very often. And I wonder how you get great interviews and you keep things fair, because you do have to have an opinion of someone, because that's your job. But you do it without, you know, still having that issue with boundaries. That's quite rare.
That means so much to me, what you've just said, truly. Because I always... really worry that I haven't done a good enough job in representing who that person actually is in a magazine interview, only because I only get so many words. And generally I always find that people give such interesting quotes that I basically just want it to be them speaking. and I'm so thank you so much for saying that.
Well, it's true.
When I started out in journalism, I was an inveterate people pleaser. Which is not the greatest combination, because...
I don't think I've met a journalist that is like that, though.
No. Well, this is the thing, is that I actually now think it served me really well in terms of the interviews that I do. Because I would go into an interview and I would want to forge a connection with the person I was interviewing. Most journalists worth their salt would say, that is not your job. Your job is to go there and ask the questions that need to be asked and then give a clear-eyed assessment of who that person is.
Yeah, get a great headline.
Exactly.
Get
a news
there.
Story. Mm. And for a long time in journalism, I felt that my style of interviewing was really out of fashion and that actually people enjoyed reading interviews that were unkind and kind of hatchet yeah. jobs on the people because they were entertaining yeah. to read, and I put that in quotation marks. And I definitely felt that because I always thought that my interviews should be about the person I was interviewing rather than me making jokes at their expense. Mm. And that's part of the reason I've loved doing podcasting. And it's why I love the job that I currently have in journalism on You Magazine, because they give me free rein to write how I write and they value that. And that's
yeah,
really lovely.
Great.
But for a long time, I would go into interviews and I would want to end up like being their best friend. Mm. And I remember there was this one instance where I interviewed Emily Blunt a few years ago, and she was just so lovely and charming and charismatic, and I felt really connected on multiple levels. And at the end of the interview, she like dropped me off and gave me a lift somewhere, and I was like,
oh my God,
we are going to be great friends.
Yeah.
And then clearly never heard from her again. And actually what she'd done is that she just had wild levels of charisma, and when I listened back to the tape, she'd given a great interview but not actually said that much, because I'd just been like dazzled by how lovely she was. So that was one example of my boundaries just kind of going out of the window in a way that wasn't particularly helpful. And now I'm much more aware, partly because I've now been interviewed myself.
Yeah.
Of what it's like. In the same way that when I wrote my first novel and my novel was reviewed, actually the first two reviews I had were awful. And I know now how upsetting that is.
Yeah.
And it made me, I stopped doing book reviews really. Mm. And only any book review I ever did subsequently was a book that I liked.
Yes.
I would never slag one off. And now it's very helpful because even the nice, vast majority of interviews I've had have been really nice. But when you see yourself written down in someone else's words, even if they're...
So weird.
It is so odd.
So weird.
It really is weird because obviously they've made a choice of what they're going to focus on and which quotes they're going to use, even if you said all of it.
And who you are.
And who you are.
Which is a huge one.
Yeah. And the first couple of interviews, there were some just like massive errors in the first paragraph. I was like, this is awful.
It's bizarre. It's a bizarre situation to
yeah.
be in.
But I think that that's now made me realise what it must be like from the other side, and also be more aware that actually, you know, read the room. Like, some people like you want to connect, and that's so beautiful and I really cherish it. And some people just want to do it as like a business like transaction and in and out, and I completely understand and respect that. It's just about getting what you can. And sorry, I'm rambling, but there's another thing that I want to say is that I am generally sincere. I like to think of myself, so if I say something, I mean it.
Yeah.
And I see nothing wrong in like sharing something of myself if it makes the other person feel comfortable.
Absolutely. I love doing that.
Yeah.
That's like the best feeling.
Yeah.
What do you think fundamentally makes us so terrified about failure? Because, you know, what is failure? It's not one thing. Failure is, you know, as you said, it could be because we've set expectations and we didn't meet them, but okay, we've worked out what that is. What does that even mean? Is the fear abandonment, rejection? Like, what is that root fear that we are desperately trying to avoid, even though we know it's inevitable?
Wow. I think the fear stems from a loss of control, because the universe, if you read the science, is a kind of chaotic place with no meaning or rationale. That to me is an extremely terrifying thought.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that, actually. I'm more of the school of thought that we can't possibly understand everything, and actually it would be arrogant to assume that we can. And there are things that are beyond human comprehension, for instance the notion of non-linear time, but that's
yes.
a whole other podcast.
Don't get me started on that. My head will explode if I start thinking about that, or infinity. I can't.
Yes.
My brain will explode.
Yeah, I know. It's because it is extraordinary when you
yeah.
start thinking about it, but that's what I think it is. We as humans are trying to impose some kind of control on a universe that seems scary because it's beyond our comprehension. Mm. And so fear of failure is like almost having a chink in that armor. You're like, oh my God, something has happened that I didn't anticipate and I feel ill-equipped for. And what does that mean? And who am I? Mm. I think that's where it all comes from. And actually, therefore, when you realize that it is beyond your control, but maybe it's beyond your control for a reason. Yeah. And maybe it's that a lesson is being sent to you in a different format from the one that you're expecting. That's tremendously reassuring.
Absolutely. Like a nice little plot twist rather than it being the end of the world.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's how I like to see them these days.
Yeah.
Even if it's still shit to deal with, it's like, we're just going off on a different journey. Let's see what happens here.
And as I'm always fond of saying, life is texture. So you can't fully appreciate happiness or contentment without having also experienced the flip side of sadness and disillusionment. And that's not to say we need to actively seek out all the bad experiences. It's just that it's part and parcel of the same thing.
Yeah.
So there's this Truman Capote quote, which is that failure is the condiment that gives success its flavour.
Oh, that's lovely.
And I think that that's so true. And just on a very practical level, the success or the fact that so many people have related and connected to the How to Fail podcast has been so immensely touching to me because I've done other things that haven't done that well. And also because I realise that it's the thing that I've put out there that is most me. It is me being most honest about who I am. And that's the one that's had most resonance. And that's a really nice thing.
And there's a huge fear for all of us to just be us. Like, what if I say what I really think? Will everyone, you know, leave me? Will everyone judge me? Will everyone not like me? And then actually, I think we all realise most of the time, however we're doing it and communicating it, when we are just us, and we're not trying to emulate someone else or block bits of us, we're more accepted and we're more embraced by other people. And that's such a lovely realisation for everyone across the board.
Exactly. And I think that ties in with boundaries, because if you're trying to please everyone all the time, you're not going to be doing a great job. Mm. Whereas if you're concentrating on the real meaningful relationships, that's where the good stuff lies. Mm. And I was reminded just then of the thing that Elizabeth Gilbert said on your podcast about, oh my God, I mean, I'm obsessed. I was so jealous of you interviewing
her. I'm jealous of me. I can't believe it happened. I'm like, I want to do it again.
But she said this thing, if you do it again, can I come along?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll just be your assistant.
Oh, that'd be a nice podcast, us three.
Yes.
Even if I do say so myself.
Rather than between two ferns, it'd be between two Elizabeths.
So good. Say. So good.
But she said this thing about, when Raya died, she had so many emails unread in her inbox and she just deleted them all.
Delete.
She was like, I don't care.
Don't care.
And it is okay for me not to care because this seismic, traumatic, awful thing has happened which has completely shaken my world, and I don't care about you asking me to speak at this event.
Yeah.
And honestly, it really stuck with me because I was like, I could do that. You can, it's within all of our gifts.
We can do it.
We can just delete our inboxes.
Heaven. Boundaries. Amen to boundaries.
Yeah.
Who's your favourite guest you've had on your podcast?
Well, you're not meant to have favourites, are you? But
you so can.
Okay. I interviewed a man called Mo Gowdat, who used to be a chief business officer at Google X, and he developed an algorithm for happiness. And he says that he can make anyone happy. And his son, Ali, died during a routine operation, tragically at the age of 21. So Mo had to put his own algorithm into practice.
Bloody hell.
And he is one of the most inspiring, enlightening, beautiful thinkers I've ever had the pleasure of being in the same room with. And I let that interview run unedited, and that's how I put it out there, because he had such important things to say. And actually, I learned so much talking to him, and then I learn more every single time I re-listen to that particular episode. So that's my favourite. But I've also had people come on. I love all of them, but I've had people come on who are unexpected. So I love reality TV, and I make no bones about that and no apology for it. And I still watch Made in Chelsea, and therefore I loved the fact that Jamie Lang came on.
Yeah. Yes.
He came on my podcast, but people who didn't watch Made in Chelsea and who might have had preconceptions about a reality TV star, loads of them got in touch with me afterwards saying, I had no idea, what a great guy.
How lovely.
How interesting. And lovely. He had such important things to say, so I liked him as well.
I mean, you've had just a plethora of incredible guests from really varying backgrounds with varying experiences, but the common theme being they are all willing to show up and be massively authentic and honest. And I'm wondering what they have felt like afterwards, because, you know, you're very good at what you do and you sit and you get comfy and people are very honest and open and they talk about those three big failures they've had. What have they felt like afterwards, and what's the reaction been like? Has anyone sort of regretted it and asked to have things removed or for it not to be put out and panicked? And also, what's the audience reaction been like?
So the reaction is as varied as the guest. So I have had a couple of people who, after the interview has happened, have felt really vulnerable, completely understandably, because quite often people are so honest and people cry and it feels a bit like therapy, which is actually the highest compliment you could pay me. And there was one instance where someone wanted to hear the recording before I put it out there. And one of the joys of being in control of your own podcast is that you can choose whether to do that or not. And I'm very much of the opinion that I want my guests to feel safe and respected.
Absolutely.
So I sent it to this person, and this person then replied to me saying, it is really beautiful and I'm so happy that it's going to be out there, and thank you for setting my mind at rest. And I've had a couple of people completely understandably who just need reassurance and who have never spoken that openly before. But then when it's out there, they're so moved, I think, by the reaction of people, because when someone chooses to be honest and vulnerable, that's when so many other people get in touch with them and relate. And so overwhelmingly, people, when they come on my podcast, I think have such a positive experience afterwards, because they realise how meaningful their words have been to people through the medium of social media, actually, which has many positives as well as negatives. And but generally speaking, when people come on House Fail, because I've asked them for their three failures in advance, I want them to feel safe setting their own parameters.
Yeah.
So if they've chosen to discuss those failures, then generally they're ready to do so. And I also always say, if you feel uncomfortable during the conversation, that's fine, we can take stuff out. But I've never been asked actually to take anything out. There was one anecdote, and I'm sure she won't mind me saying, and my friend Francesca Siegel came on to talk about giving birth to premature twins. And she just thought one anecdote made her sound really geeky. And she was like, please,
geeky's
can you take
good.
That out?
I'd be happy with a geeky anecdote. That's fine. Oh, how funny. But I think that's the thing. People, like you say, quite instantly realise, even if they do feel vulnerable, and it is really scary, that sharing their stories and being 100% them and, you know, telling their truth, there's nothing wrong with that. I think we all feel so much worry or shame about our past or things that we deem as failures. It is the most sort of vulnerable space you can be in. But it's the truth, and it's what happened, and it's really connective. And you can hear that when, like, the Nigel Slater one, which was, oh, just the most gorgeous episode. It's one of my favourites. And to hear the depths that he went to and into his past.
Yeah.
And someone that you would kind of just think, oh, he's got a lovely life now, and he's really, you know, he's lived the dream, and he's succeeded and achieved so much. But to hear how much the past can obviously still affect us all, and how connective that can be to other people, that's just a beautiful thing all round, and hopefully helps lots of other people lose a bit of shame in the process.
Yeah, I mean, Nigel Slater, his failures were so beautifully written that I actually printed them out and made him sign them at the end.
Oh, I mean, his
They were so beautiful, and they were literally things like, I failed as a son. And I was so honoured that he chose to go there. And one of his failures is actually failure to be a good friend. I'm determined to make him into my friend. We've had lunch, so I feel like
I'm
on the path. Yeah,
you're so there. Sod Emily Blunt. You're on the path to getting the best cooked food ever. Wonderful. Oh, well, Elizabeth, this has been such a joy, and I've been looking forward to this for a long time, and I'm so glad we got the chance to just sit and chat about all sorts of stuff. And I know that if my producer Matt was not sat there waving his arms around, we would be here until 2022. But thank you so much.
I've loved it so much, Fern. Thank you. And it's been a dream of mine not even to come on the Happy Place podcast. I was like, that's way too much of an ambition. But just to like
silly.
Be in your presence. Thank you so, so much. It's been lovely.
Thank you. Thanks so much to Elizabeth Day. What she's doing is just so inspirational and game-changing. So do check out How to Fail on your podcast app of choice. And you know what? I'm very lucky because she's become a great friend. Lucky, lucky me. And while you're there, don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Share your favourite episode on Spotify, or simply go into your friend's house and ask Alexa for Happy Place. Basically, just spread the word. And to find out who's on the show next week, find us on Instagram, at Happy Place Official. A massive thanks again to Elizabeth, to the producer Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, and to you lot for listening. Thank you, thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.